This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I am Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
No, but we're two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Welcome to the pod today. If you're new here and you want to learn more about us, you can visit our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to everything we mention on the show. You can find us on Instagram at forever35podcast, and you can also join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums.
And you can shop our favorite products at shopmy.us/forever35. We have a newsletter at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. And you can call or text us at 781-591-0390 and email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
You know, I recommended my favorite sweatpants in a recent newsletter, and I'm very curious if anybody purchased them.
Kate, I have not purchased them.
I mean, this wasn't full like disclosure. Me trying to get you to purchase them. But I feel like I had been searching for sweatpants for so long.
Yes.
And buying like these fancy Instagram advertised sweatpants when all I needed was the men's Fruit of the Loom sweatpants in my life.
All you needed was Fruit of the Loom.
Do you remember those commercials when we were kids where it was like a person dressed up as a big pile of fruit for Fruit of the Loom?
Does that ring a bell? I do, Kate. I do remember that. I was also thinking, like, you're very tall, so it must be hard to find, I mean, any pants, but sweatpants that fit you.
Well, you shared recently a Target sweat outfit that you loved and purchased, and it looks fantastic on you. It would not fall the same way on my body, on my very long legs. It would be a different look.
It would be a different look. Not necessarily a bad look, but just different.
Well, I do appreciate stores that sell tall sizing.
Yes.
And there's more and more of them, I find. But yeah, I often dip into men's because, you know, gender is a construct and I don't really give a shit who my sweatpants are intended for. Who knew sweatpants could fire me up?
Well, look, a good pair of sweatpants are worth their weight in gold.
Dori, you know, I think today's episode, we can just really hop into our conversation.
Let's hippity hop in.
Because, you know, what's one of my favorite things about getting to host Forever 35 is when folks reach out to us passionately suggesting a guest and we've already booked the guest.
Totally.
And that has been happening a lot over the last couple of months. People have been reaching out and voicing their love for a one Casey Davis.
Ugh.
And I have just had to bite back a smile every time we get those texts and emails and voicemails about the impact a one Casey Davis has had on your life, because she's our guest today on Forever 35.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, look, I'm not sure when she first came into my life. I think on TikTok or on Instagram. And you probably have seen her there. She is known for her compassionate and practical approach to self and home care for those dealing with mental health, physical illness, and hard seasons of life. She's got over 1 million followers on social media and grew that community in less than a year.
Amazing.
And she is especially beloved by us neurodivergent folks, I think, as a person who really talks a lot about systems and other ways of, quote, being organized while also having ADHD. She's been a very helpful follow for my brain, but she's not just for us. She's been helpful for so many people. Her book, which is called How to Keep House While Drowning, has sold over 70,000 copies.
Amazing.
It's an Amazon bestseller. I mean, goodness gracious.
She was really great to talk to. And I feel like shed some interesting light on my own dynamic in my own house in a way that I hadn't thought about. So I was grateful for that.
Yeah, I really like her book. And I would definitely recommend it if you haven't picked it up. One of the things I like about it is that the chapters are very short, which is intentional. And I have found her way of thinking, not just about the systems that you implement in terms of like keeping house, but also the emotions that we bring to it and also the way in which we think of ourselves. Yes. The judgment, Dory.
The judgment.
Because you and I have both grappled with that when it comes to ourselves,
definitely.
I think.
Definitely.
So I think we are just going to hop right into our conversation with Casey Davis.
Let's
a few
hop.
More things about Casey before we get started. In her bio, she notes that she began her therapy journey at 16 when she entered treatment for drug addiction and mental health issues. And after getting sober, she became a speaker and advocate for mental health and recovery. Professionally, she has worked most of her career in the field of addiction in roles such as therapist, consultant, and executive director. And she lives in Houston, Texas, with her husband and 2 daughters, and we're thrilled to have her on the pod today. Well, Casey, welcome to Forever 35. This is a real dream come true for us. We're thrilled to have you on the podcast. We know our listeners are going to be really excited. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
I'm so glad to be here.
Well, hopefully you will enjoy the fact that we like to kick every episode off asking our guests what a self-care practice is in their own life. And hilariously, you describe your podcast, your own podcast, is a podcast about self-care, but you also, you know, say you hate the term for self-care. So with that in mind, we don't have to call it self-care, but a routine or a practice that you have, and you have shared so many of them, but what is one that you have now in your day-to-day life that brings you joy?
So, okay, this is a hard question, right? Because I feel like I have like a bazillion methods and practices and like examples I could give. But I think if I really were to think about like a piece that like runs through all of them, I think it's been like learning to treat myself with tenderness. And like sometimes that manifests in doing something, right? So sometimes that manifests in, you know, I'm going to let myself rest today, or you know what, I'm going to go. I mean, and sometimes it's even like the stereotypical stuff, like I'm going to go, you know, get my hair cute cut, like whatever. But it's like more powerful even in the moments where like I've just like screamed at my children, or I'm super stressed out and I don't have time, or I just, I've got an alphabet soup of learning disabilities. And so I frequently transpose numbers. So the amount of times that I've missed like a really important meeting, is like embarrassing. And in those moments from like years and years and years, it took me to get here, of like learning to treat myself the way that like I would respond to my 5-year-old when she feels like crushed at having made a mistake and to just be tender with myself. And that is like probably the most powerful like self-care practice that I do is when I can manage it. Like tell myself that I don't have to atone for my mistakes by like punishing myself or hating myself or feeling bad about myself. And like recognizing that all of those feelings of self-loathing and shame are not required in order to feel motivated to make changes to do something different.
Ooh, oh boy. Oh boy. Did you just say self-loathing and shame? Because those are two people I live with that I'm trying to get to move out of my brain.
I was just going to ask, is that something that you also ever do like retroactively? Because I find that kind of thinking about my past self and trying to have empathy for that person and that person's actions that maybe at the time I was so judgmental about and so hard on myself, like that's been kind of a good but hard practice for me. So I'm wondering if that is something that kind of also resonates with you.
Gosh. I don't know if you can see, but that for some reason that made me start crying. Because the answer is yes. Yeah. Like I frequently think of like 16-year-old me when she was like being checked into the psych ward and like taken to inpatient treatment. And I think it's really meaningful because I was not the kind of like broken kid that you felt very sorry for. Mm. Like, 'cause I was kind of an asshole. Like I did things that were not kind and I was obnoxious and I was egotistical and I was all these things. So to look back on her and think like you really deserved tenderness.
Yeah.
Is really powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the word gentle a lot. I mean, I think you use it a lot, but in your book, it comes up a lot. And that word has been very powerful for me. And I think it kind of aligns with tenderness in this way as an alternative to, like you said, self-loathing and shame.
Well, and it's also an alternative to like liking yourself or having self-esteem or like caring about yourself at all. Like you don't have to like anything about you.
Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of years, like fruitless years, you know, like saying my mirror affirmations and like doing therapy work and like trying to like myself. And oddly enough, like there was a part of my journey where learning how to be introspective was really important. Like learning how to understand why I was doing the things that I was doing, because I was doing all sorts of weird destructive stuff and I didn't really understand it. And I needed to understand that. But it almost like, I almost like took it too far. Where like everything I did, I was like hyper analyzing and like, was that right? Was that wrong? Was that selfish? Was that? And so like everything was about like figuring out where everything came from. And I thought, and I was frequently thinking about like how to do the right thing, how to do the good thing, how to do the moral thing, how to do the healthy thing, how to do the mature thing. And was that thing healthier? And I'm talking like I was analyzing thoughts for like whether they were mature or healthy or not. And what I now realize as I look back is like, I was thinking about myself just as intensely as like, I was just as self-absorbed when I was trying to be like healthy and mature and right and kind as I was when all I was thinking about was like getting what I want, doing what I wanted and all these sort of things. Like, yes, it was more of a benevolent self-absorption, but like it didn't really. And listen, if I had to take one over the other, I would obviously take that one because then I wasn't like dying of drug addiction and I had like good relationships. But it was really cool to move to like the next level of healing where it was like, oh, I'm just not thinking about myself at all.
Yeah.
Like I could just think about, you know, I don't have to think about myself that much anymore. And whether something was good, bad, right, or wrong. And I'm not saying like, you know, I will obviously occasionally have someone say like, hey, that hurt my feelings or like, oh, I don't think you should have done that. Like, yeah, let me stop. Let me look at it. Let me address, you know, but when it comes to like all of those little thoughts and decisions and mistakes that like I'm usually the one thinking about it far longer than the person that was even affected by it. I just sort of learned to look back quickly and be like, yeah, it was fine. Or like, oh, maybe something different next time. And then just like move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this kind of reminds me of the way you encourage people to think about keeping their houses clean. Like, it's a morally neutral thing in the same way that these kinds of thoughts are. Like, it sounds like you're encouraging yourself and other people to think of them as neutral, like morally or otherwise, right? And I was wondering if we could kind of shift into talking about house stuff, because this has been something that this has been an ongoing issue for me and my spouse. Our house is not cool. It's not dirty, but it's not clean.
isn't it weird that there's no other words?
Mm-hmm.
Like, as if those are the only two options mm-hmm. that a house has.
Yes, totally. And so I was hoping that you could kind of introduce our listeners who, I know many of our listeners are familiar with you, but perhaps for those who are not, could you introduce our listeners to some of your kind of core beliefs about care tasks?
Yes. So, I mean, the main belief that I always start with is this idea that care tasks are morally neutral. And so by care tasks, I mean cooking, cleaning, tidying, organizing, exercising, grocery shopping, taking your medication, you know, sleeping, any of those things, right? The things that you usually do in and around and about your house and your space. And they are simply just things you do to care for yourself and sometimes your family. And by morally neutral, I mean that the way you do them, how you do them, whether you do them, how good or bad you are at them has no material connection to who you are as a person, your character, your responsibility level, your maturity, whether or not you deserve to be loved or shamed. And it's sort of that same thread of like, if you look at your house right now, or you think of your house right now, the like step number one is sort of like shifting to this idea that like, it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like if your house is really clean right now, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything about you. It doesn't mean anything about your family. It doesn't mean anything about your house. Like it has no meaning. Mm-hmm. And if your house is really messy right now, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean anything. And I think we get really caught up with like, oh, this means I'm in a bad place. This means that I'm good. This means that I'm responsible. This means I'm a good parent. This means that I'm, you know, never going to find anyone because look at how I live. And listen, I'm not saying like, surely I understand that there are people that will say sometimes my space and whether it's functional or not, is giving me information about how I'm doing. And it sort of prompts me to check in with myself. Like, that's great. Your space can give you information. But I find it really helpful to let go of believing that our space means anything about us. Mm-hmm. Because then we can just go, okay, so if it doesn't mean anything about, because a lot of us, the whole motivation we have for doing care tasks is because of what we think those things mean about us.
Yeah.
If I'm not clean, what does that mean about me? If I'm too messy, what does that mean about me? And if none of that means anything, then what is the motivation to do any of that?
Mm.
And you kind of come to this place of like the only motivation to unload and reload my dishwasher, if a sink full of dishes doesn't mean anything about me, is because I would like to have clean dishes. Or because I'm sort of taking it one step further, like I'm a person who deserves to have a clean plate to eat off of.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes less about the kind of the morality and the obligations and the expectations and the measuring sticks and more about just function. Like, does it function? And for many years, I functioned just fine with a sink full of dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So like a sink full of dishes doesn't mean anything about me. The question that I have to ask myself is like, is this working for me? Like, is this functional?
Yeah.
And if it's not functional, then you get to go, okay, but like, is it so unfunctional that like, I really need to fix it today? Like, is this really like, is this the most unfunctional thing in my life? Does this really need to be priority? Or can this like wait for another season when I'm not so like overburdened with things? And so you can write that off, or you can go, no, it's really unfunctional. And it's like really affecting my day-to-day impact, like impacting my day-to-day functioning. You know, I've got maggots, or like I don't have clean dishes in the morning when my kids are hungry. I walk in every day and I, you know, like all of this kind of stuff. And so I think that's where it's much more helpful to just look at your, like, you don't exist to serve your space. Your space mm-hmm. exists to serve you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it also leads to us realizing how many arbitrary rules that we follow when we do care tasks. And like, maybe it's okay to break all those rules if something is mm-hmm. easier for you. Like, I am all about making care tasks as easy as possible.
Mm-hmm. So we're just going to take a short break and we will be right back.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30+. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, we're back.
You talking about not putting laundry away was like revelatory to me. Even though it's been helpful reading your work and following you, and also like learning more about myself and my own neurodivergency and all these things. But like, it was just like, I read that and it was like, oh, that's an option. Oh, because that does work really well. Like for one of my kids, especially, like that's how she lit, like that system, she made that system and that works. And I'm always like, put your clothes away. Why? I don't know, because that doesn't work for me either. So it's just, it's so freeing for to think about the things that we've been taught as not okay are actually systems that do work for us. And breaking out of those narratives is incredibly, it's scary, but it's also incredibly freeing.
Absolutely. I actually recently like upgraded my whole closet system. So those of you who don't follow me, I have a no fold laundry system. So I don't fold anything. I hang shirts that belong to me and my husband, and then everything else goes into baskets. So I have like a basket of my shorts, a basket of my pants, a basket of my kids' shirts, a basket of their shorts, a basket of their pants. Like, so it's really separated out. So it's easy to find everything. Things don't really wrinkle when there's just like a few items in a basket. Right. And, so that helped me for a long time. We just moved into a house and we're still kind of doing, and we do a family closet. So like everybody's clothes are all in the same closet. At the new house, it's me and my kids. We have one closet together because I'm usually like in there. They're 3 and 5. Like I'm still helping everyone get dressed. And because I'm the one that puts away the laundry and I don't want to go to different closets to do that. I want to go to one place. I want to be able to put everything away without bending down and standing up and bending down and standing up and bending down and standing up. So I recently purchased a rolling garage stool that lives in my closet because I have hardwood floors, so that as I'm taking, and then I also, we have like this little, like this tiny little ottoman that like the top comes off, and I brought that in there so that I could put something on it so that it was the right height for me to reach into the basket when I'm sitting on my stool. And then I just wheel around, like I just wheel around the closet, putting everything away. So I don't have to like sit, stand, because I realized that I was avoiding putting the laundry away even when I don't fold it. And then I really like stopped and was like, why? Get very precise, Casey. Why? What is the element that you find yourself procrastinating, resisting, dreading? And I was like, it's the up and down. And see, old me would have been like, not even to give myself permission to ask, because it would have been like, you're supposed to do this, you know, just do it. Like, what kind of person, you know, and if I did ask, I'd be like, okay, you lazy SOB, like go in there. Who cares? Get some exercise. I don't do that anymore. I go, how can I make this easier? And then I make it easier. And then I go, ooh, but how can I make it even easier? How can I make it even easier than this? Like, I just never stop asking that question when it comes to care tasks. And so now, you know, you wash it, you dry it, you bring the whole thing into the laundry room. I mean, the closet, you put it up on its little ottoman and you just wheel around listening to a podcast. And all of a sudden, like this task that I used to dread so much that I would put it off and then we wouldn't have enough clean clothes is something I don't even mind doing anymore because I addressed all these like little pain points. And it's a pretty big deal when you start giving yourself permission to do that though.
Giving yourself permission to do things that you've been kind of socialized your whole life not to do is challenging. Kate, do you want to get to some of the questions that our listeners had?
Yes. Okay. We've got so many questions that we have and also some from listeners. Someone wrote, please tell her I love her and then ask about her fridge organization. How do we stop letting things die?
Okay. So here's something that I started doing that I think is really helpful. So I often joke that like if I designed refrigerators, they'd be 6 feet wide and like 6 inches deep. Mm. Like I want front row only. Like if I put something behind something, it's dead to me in the fridge. And God help it if I put it in a drawer. Like the amount of like bags of cucumber soup that I've pulled out of like a produce drawer could feed an army and then they'd all die because it's disgusting. So, I realized that the door of my fridge had all of this like front row real estate and I was putting sauces and condiments in the door, which I think most people do. But what I realized is like when it came to specifically produce, like I will eat it if I see it. If I'm hungry, open it up. Oh, carrots. Yeah, I'll eat a carrot. But I am never going to be somebody who's like sitting on the couch being like, you know what I could go for right now? Some delicious carrots.
Carrots.
They'll never be me. Like, I just remembered I have carrots and I'm going to go look for them. Couldn't be me. So, but if I open it and I saw it, I'd be like, yeah, why not? So I realized that when I'm having a meal, though, I do think to myself, you know what could go with this meal? Some soy sauce. And I'll go look for it. So I don't need to be like visually reminded about the existence of my soy sauce, but I do need to be visually reminded about the existence of my carrots. So I started putting all of my condiments into the drawers, just like on their sides, like messy in there.
Okay.
And started putting all of the produce in the door. I did that for a long time. I've recently gotten even like some containers, so they're not necessarily in the door, but I still do the same thing where like I put all of the condiments in the drawers and I use the door for like extra space to put like front row items because I try not to stack items behind other items.
This is so smart. It reminds me of something I heard you say in your podcast about how like as aggravating as often like home influencers are, you often can find like clear containers are actually very helpful in organizing. I know I've been doing that in my fridge of like, we slice everything up and put them into these clear organizers and then they're just right here. So we, like you said, we aren't having cucumber soup, which is a literal thing that's happened in our fridge as well. I love that. That's so much.
Yeah. I mean, when things are presented in that sort of like aspirational lifestyle feel first, like so long, it's like you go from like buying in and trying everything. And then you realize like, oh, this is silly. And then you end up like rejecting everything out of hand that has that like hue to it. So when I first, cause I would watch a lot of TikToks about like restocks and I was like, I will never be this person, even though it's satisfying to watch. But then I started actually using clear containers. So I am one of those people that decants everything before it goes into the pantry. And I've tried to do that before and it didn't stick. And I realized it's because every time I've tried to do it before, it wasn't about like, how does this bring function to my life? It was about like, I just want to be the kind of person that has an organized pantry. I want to be that kind of person. That kind of person seems responsible. Like that kind of person seems like they have their life together. And so I wasn't, you know what I mean? Like that was the enjoyment of it was like, I feel like I've really got it together now. And so I didn't do it for a long time. And when I started doing it again, I actually had this motivation of like, this makes my life easier. I remember what I have. I eat at home more often. I can see when something's running out. I don't feel as much like, oh, there's nothing to eat because I can see everything. My kids can help pick out things. Things don't go bad. Like when the enjoyment of a task or a system is purely the functional, like upgrade quality of life it brings to me, that I have found is intrinsically much more motivating than just, oh, this looks pretty, or like, oh, now I feel like I'm being a good mom, or like, oh, now I'm that kind of person.
We got a question from a listener that was actually kind of related to a question that I had. I am neurotypical. My spouse has ADHD. And one of our listeners asked, how do I support/fairly share tasks with housemates with ADHD? And my question is like kind of, he is my housemate. He is also my husband. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts or advice for those of us who are not neurodivergent, but live with someone neurodivergent.
Yeah, sure. So I find these would be generalizations, not universalisms, right? Like not everybody's exactly the same. But in general, people with ADHD have poor working memory. And we do better with visual lists.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, this is so validating to hear just selfishly, but thank you.
So for like months and months and months, I do this thing called closing duties where I have like four or five things that I do in my kitchen every night. I would, for like, I'm talking months, like maybe at least 9 months, in the middle of that list, I would have to stop and reference the list, even though it was the same five things every night. Couldn't remember. And so visual lists are really helpful. The other thing I find helpful is there's this weird thing that I refer to as the flow, which is like when it comes to like energy and motivation and task initiate and like drive to do things, I feel like I have this big like energetic river and it just like flows where it wants to flow. And so like I actually am like a super productive individual. Like I crush getting things done. But the issue with ADHD is not that you can't pay attention. It's that you can't really regulate your attention. So I will get something done and not get other things done that were probably more important, that like had deadlines.
Yes.
Right? Like I'll go organize a pantry for 3 hours and walk by a moldy coffee cup multiple times. And the amount of times that I have tried to like, you know, make myself a person that can do these like odd one-off tasks, like as I see them, and I just don't. And so I had to learn like, okay, how can I make this like energetic river of like drive to do things like go over this moldy coffee cup? Like, how can I like dam the river and like, you know, shift the river and like make it flow over that thing? And so I find that like taking those little, first of all, if you can help it, like don't assign those little one-off tasks to people with ADHD. We hate them. They make us want to die. And so, but like at one point I made myself, like Tuesdays were restock day. And so like, I would rather die than take my coffee cup downstairs after I get done with this, but give me a clipboard and a list. And Tuesday nights is restock day. Like I will restock everything in the house. Like check, get all the cups. Check, put all the toilet paper, right? And so bundling those things together is really helpful for me.
Oh, yeah.
This is very interesting. And what you said about the river pinged for me because my husband has what he calls his window. And he'll just be like, I'm going to like clean up the living room. Like, I'm just giving an example. Okay, I'm cleaning up the living room now. Help me clean up the living room or whatever. And I'm like, I don't feel like cleaning up the living room.
No,
like,
if the window closes, yes, we can't do it.
Like, he's like, this is my window. Like, this is my window. Do this right now. This is what I feel like doing. And I'm like, but I was going to read something. Can't we do it later? And he's like, no. And like, he's like, we'll miss the window. And I'm like, what is the window? Like, I just didn't get it for the longest time. And I've been like getting it more. And it's also, I sometimes struggle with like resenting that, right? Like, well, it's like, okay, well, you have the window, but I don't have the window. And like, can't we talk
about... Yeah, frankly, you shouldn't have to work in his window. He can work in his own window.
Can we talk about a mutually like beneficial window? But like, it doesn't work that way. So it, right. So I shouldn't have to work in his window, but I also want to like accommodate his window. You know, it's complicated.
Sure. Yeah. I think the other thing is like, I find that I'm most successful when I can make tasks like into as few steps as possible. So like, for example, when I want to like reset my house, like I try to do this like once a weekend, I usually do that. For me includes like picking up all the trash off the floor, throwing all the trash away, like basically like picking everything up off the floor. And I have like, a system. So I pick up all the trash first, and then I pick up all of the laundry, and then I pick up all of the dishes, and then I put away all the things that have a place, and I put away all the things that don't have a place. And, but so that helps. But the thing is that again, with the bending. The bending and the moving. So ADHD, we know that we're not exactly sure what's happening in the brain, but we know it has to do with the regulation of dopamine. And so like any way that you can remove like small pain points makes it a lot easier to like move towards that task. So in order to try and make this like a flow, right? And not feel like all these disjointed weird steps, I got this like giant commercial size laundry hamper on wheels. And then I cut a piece of cardboard, the cover half of it, and I put two laundry baskets on the top. And then I cut like a little plastic shoe hanger and attached it with some shower curtain rings where I put like the duster and the whatever, all that stuff in there. And then I bought myself a grabber. and then a dustbuster that, and the dustbuster sticks on the platform in the middle. So I have this like little homemade, almost like housekeeping cart for my own house. And I put in a podcast that I want to listen to. And I wheel around my house with my grabber and I pick up the trash and I put it into one of the bins and I pick up the clothes and I put it into the bin and I pick up the toys and I put it into the bin and I see some crumbs and I zip them up. And so, that works for me. Like, it's really hard for me as someone with ADHD to do things when I'm doing something else. So like, if I'm on the way to do something and I either am not going to notice something out of place, or if I do notice it, like I can't stop to do it because if I do, I'll forget what I was doing. So it's much easier for me. So like, and that's, there's a lot of executive functioning issues that go into ADHD and problems with what's referred to as attention shifting. You might be able to be going to get a Band-Aid for your kid, see a cup, pick the cup up, or see the cup, remember the cup's there and come back for it. But those two options, right, which is grab the cup on the way or just wait and come back, both of those utilize parts of executive functioning that are really compromised in ADHD. The first is attention shifting, which is I'd already thought about, planned, designed a motor plan and initiated going to get this Band-Aid. And now I need to incorporate shifting my attention to this, thinking about where it needs to go, designing another motor plan to reach down and grab it and integrate that into what was existing, sort of the steps of what I was doing. Mm. But the other one is requires working memory, which is okay, I'll do that as soon as I'm finished with this. But for me, I will have forgotten that I saw anything by the time I finished getting the Band-Aid. And if I stop to do the thing, I get that. Anyways, so those are not great tasks to put like an ADHD person in charge of. It's not as helpful for someone to say to me, I just want you to pick up after yourself. Mm-hmm. It's much more helpful for someone to say like, you know, once a day, can you go around and pick up the clothes? Or for me, it's like once a week, I reset everything. Cause if I can like make that what my attention is on, especially if I have like a good podcast, that's much easier. Anyways, I don't know if that's helpful.
I forget
we're answering multiple questions and I just start talking. So
helpful. it's helpful for me as the ADHD person and understanding myself better because I've always known there was this thing with me, but never known what it was. And then like really understanding and getting an ADHD diagnosis as an adult, et cetera, et cetera. I know, you know, it's like so clarifying. It's like finally the everything makes sense as to, and I don't remember where I was going with this, but
yeah,
it's very validating. And I love you mentioned, you kind of, you're talking about the way you do the five things tidying method for our listeners who just have never heard of it. Can you just tell folks what those five things are? You mentioned them in passing just now, but just to really hit it on the head.
Right. So I take a room or maybe a couple of rooms or a space and I go down the list and I go around with a trash bag in my hand and I pick up all of the trash I can find and put it directly into the bag, tie off the bag and leave it there. And then I get a laundry basket and I go all around the room, put all the laundry in there, put it down, leave it there. I go around and get all the dishes and I take them to the sink and I leave them there. And then I like pick a little corner and go like counterclockwise and I put everything away that has like a home and anything that doesn't have a space, I just like make a pile in the middle of the room. And so once everything is put away that has a home, now I have this pile of things that like don't have a home that need to be maybe purged, maybe given to someone, or maybe like organized and found permanent homes. And that I can do like with a Netflix show on or something like that. So that's what I do. And then I can go back and like throw the trash away into the dumpster and start the dishwasher, and, you know, start the laundry.
So helpful. So helpful because I do the thing that you talk about where it's like, I bring the dish to the sink and then I'm like, I got to do the dishes. And then I forget everything yep. is just left. Yeah.
It helps you from getting distracted. The other thing I'll say is like, not everybody has the resources or the budget to be able to outsource care tasks, but there is like this really big Venn diagram of people that do have the resources and just like aren't letting themselves because they feel like that's not justified. And I like to say, like, if you have a partner that's ADHD or you are ADHD, like, you have a disability and these things are legitimately harder for you. And if you have the resources to, for example, like send your laundry out to a wash and fold, even if it's, you know, a couple times a month, or you have the resources to get your groceries delivered, or you have the resources to have someone come in once a quarter and do the deep cleaning, like, it's okay to allow yourself to do that. There's not like some arbitrary like level of importance something has to be to justify like you just getting to make the decision that like you want to do that.
Yes. Ooh. Chapter 36, outsourcing care tasks is morally neutral. Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to take a short break and we will be right back.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
All right, we are back.
We got another question about your TikTok. Someone is wondering, the comment section on your TikToks can be wild. How do you deal with it?
Yeah, they can be wild. So sometimes I just really get my feelings hurt.
Yeah.
Frankly. There comes a time, especially like if I have a really viral video and you can see in like the feed of comments, like when it starts to turn. And you reach this critical mass of, you know, this has now got, and so the TikTok algorithm is weird in that it pushes it to like the people that follow you, know you, or people that would be in various demographics that are familiar with the type of topics. And you can actually pinpoint the moment down to the hour when a viral video moves beyond those concentric circles and just starts to hit random FYPs, because the comments will turn into the most vicious, mean comments that you've ever heard. And oftentimes I have to make the decision to turn the comment section off.
Yeah.
Because like, it's just not healthy to be like pelted with that kind of insult over and over and over. There's often time, like there are frequently times where somebody says something that's like extremely, like one of the isms or ists, like racist, homophobic, transphobic, that I have to like delete the comment altogether because I just don't want people to see that. What's harder is that there's often times where somebody says something where it's like, that's not like the right way to think about that.
Yeah.
But then you also, it's like, where do you stop though? Like at some point, it's like, that's that person. They think that. And like, it might be like a shitty thing to think, but it's not like, it's not really like hitting the ists, isms, like stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I mean, like, or like, oh, I disagree with that, but it's like, well, like, I mean, they get to say it, I guess.
Well, you know what
I mean?
It's also like labor for you to be like constantly monitoring your comment section and responding to comments. Like that is a lot of work and a lot of time. So. Yeah. Are there particular topics that you feel like kind of turn, or is it, or does it seem sort of random?
Yeah, for sure. Anything about the patriarchy always turns if it goes viral.
Yeah.
Because the patriarchy. It's funny though, because like it'll always be some video about how like men don't like women. They just get socialized to be sexually attracted to them. Or it'll be like, you know, men don't see women as real human beings with complex thoughts and feelings. It'll be some commentary like that about the patriarchy. And it'll get into the hands of men outside of like the ones that like would listen to that and be like, what an interesting thing about the patriarchy that maybe I'll reflect upon. And their response to it is like, do y'all cuss on this podcast?
Yeah.
Their response will be like, it's not true that men don't like women, you fat fucking bitch. I'll be like, methinks you doth protest too much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd be like, we don't see women just as sexual objects. And I don't even know why you could speak on this, because who would want to fuck you? And it's like, do you guys not see yourselves? Right. Like, they literally prove my point in the comments by being just like wildly misogynistic. And it's not, listen, a lot of men follow me and I follow a lot of men. And it's like never, it's never like men who, you know, are like, yeah, man, I've been like unpacking my, you know, privilege and things like that. It's always just like random.
Yeah.
Randos.
Right.
So that those always turn. I often find that I try really hard to address when I see racism and homophobia and transphobia and misogyny and those sort of things. Sometimes what happens is that that will, like, the call will be coming from inside the house. Like, it won't be like some random right wing person. It'll be like someone who aligns with me on lots of different issues. That will say, like, they will then weaponize their marginalization as like, you can't call me out. I have this disability or that disability, or, you know, you, like that kind of thing. Right. And so then it becomes weird, 'cause it's like, but I can, you know, and so that's always hard, because then it can often like snowball into like Casey Davis being, you know, an ableist. And it's like, well, let's back up for a second. So those are sometimes hard when you have to like address those kind of nuances.
Can I, on that topic, can I share a listener question? They asked, how do us neurodivergent folks do struggle care in capitalism and white supremacy culture?
Well, a lot of, I think understanding like a lot of the roots for where we get the messages we do about perfectionism in care tasks come from a white supremacist culture. They come from the patriarchy. They come from the idea that like women are supposed to cook and clean and stay in the kitchen. But they also come from like a great deal of racism in our country, because when the aristocracy from England moved over, you know, they don't do their own care tasks. They enslaved people to do their care tasks. And so the image of a beautiful, thin white woman with perfectly coiffed hair and, you know, looking nice and put together and clean, standing in a sparkling, clean living room is a status symbol. The ease at which we perform care tasks is a status symbol. And I learned all this from Danita Platt, who is amazing. You can follow her at Danita Platt on TikTok. Platt has two T's. And she talks about care tasks, but she's a Black woman. And so she talks about the history of care tasks and how that comes into play. And so, you know, follow that down the line. And even after slavery has ended, we continue to exploit Black and brown people and primarily women to do care tasks for us. And it wasn't really until civil rights movement and a lot of labor rights things where, and then the wealth gap of capitalism creates this wealth gap that we're now in, where all of a sudden, for the first time in our history, poor and even most middle class families cannot afford to hire domestic help. Right? We are still required to, you know, get married and have all the kids and go get the career and be the perfect mom. So we still have the standards that were levied at our great-great-grandparents who had a whole staff. Even if you had poor great-grandparents, like, ask them. Most of them still, at some point, were able to hire someone to help. So we still have those standards, but we don't have any of that help. And we're crushed under it. And so I think it starts with kind of the recognition of where that comes from, and that rejecting those, that perfectionism, rejecting that stuff is in and of itself like the beginning of your activism. It cannot be the end of it, but it can be the beginning of it.
Yeah. I mean, I want to keep you here for 5 hours.
I want to stay for 5 hours.
But how does that sound?
No, I can't. No, that wasn't part of the agreement. But could we? I think that's just, you give us so much to think about. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am for your work. It just means a lot. So thank you.
Yeah. It's so invaluable.
Yeah. And yeah, especially, you know, anyway. It could go on and on. I'm gonna sell my role.
The little like cherry on top of that, I think, is I'm gonna assume a white person asked that question. And what has been really beneficial to me is to ask myself, like, why am I asking that question? Because there's a big difference between like, how can I care for myself and my family and engage in Black liberation versus how can I make sure that I'm not participating in white supremacy so that I can maintain my feel good feelings about being a good white person. Like, how do I make all the right decisions so that I can be one of the good ones? And then I just get caught up, but like, that is white supremacy. It's like, how can I continue to be perfect? How can I continue to do all the right things? It's because I'm too scared of someone telling me that I'm doing something problematic. It's like, that really centers me and me and like nice white liberal moms, right? Like, as opposed to how can I make room in my life to contribute to the liberation of Black people, brown people, queer people, trans people? Like there's some way that I can materially do that. And it might be in a very, 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 very small way, but like, that's more important, like finding room in your life to do something. I think, if I'm understanding correctly, like what I've been listening to from the Black people that actually talk about this, like that's more important than thinking about like, how can I take on these huge systems and like make my life so that I'm never participating in these systems? Cause like, that's impossible. That's the whole point. Like, it's so locked in.
Right. Well, this has given me a lot to think about. And for everyone who doesn't follow Casey on TikTok, please follow her and get her book, watch her TED Talk. I've already learned so much from you and I so appreciate your work. So thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you.
We mentioned your TikTok, we mentioned your book, but where can our listeners find you if they want to follow your work?
So I'm on TikTok as Domestic Blisters. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Struggle Care. And I have, my website is strugglecare.com. So if you go there, like you can pretty much get to everything. My podcast is named Struggle Care,
your podcast,
which you can get through the website. My book is called How to Keep House While Drowning, which you can get through to the website. I've got lots of downloads and printables and things like that. I have an online course on how to clean your depression house. My TED Talk is linked there. Like, really everything's on the website if you just kind of want to go to one central place.
I think that was how I first initially encountered you, was I bought one of your downloads.
How cool.
Yeah. Like I don't remember. Someone must have mentioned you and I was like, I need this. So, and just all kind of snowballed from there. So, well, thank you again. This was such a delight to get to talk to you, and
thank you.
And we really appreciate it.
Dory.
Yes, Kate.
I have learned a lot. Sometimes there are times where I feel like I think I know everything about a topic, or like I know everything that I'm going to ever be able to know about how I, Kate Spencer, can stay on top of things. And then I realize I know nothing at all. And that was, I feel like I learned so much in our conversation with Casey and after reading her book.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that has been helpful is using my time timer. I've busted out my time timer again.
Ooh, we love a time timer.
So if you're not familiar with time timers, they are visual clocks that you can set up to an hour or up to 60 minutes. And they visually show via color the time ticking away. So for some of us who, if you say, hey, we have 30 minutes until we have to leave the house, for some people, that registers, and for other people, it doesn't. And a visual reminder is really helpful. So in the mornings, my daughter and I have been using our really big time timer. It's like the extra large size. so that we know at like 7:45, we're going to give ourselves 30 minutes and we have to walk out of the house at 8:15. And it, I think it helps both of us.
That's great.
Yeah, it's really a powerful tool.
I love that. So
if you aren't time timing, I highly recommend it. Dori, can I share an anecdote from our personal lives?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay, so your intention last week was your mammogram.
Yes.
And we were texting and I was like, blah, 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 look at this document. And you were like, I'm in my mammogram. So you did it.
I did check it off. And actually, this week, my intention is to make a couple of other doctor's appointments that I have just not made. So going to try and get those, just get those set, you know?
Well done, my friend. Well done.
Thank you. How about you, Kate? How did cold care go?
Cold care has been a challenge just because it's been an extremely hectic week this week,
yeah.
With some stuff that is going on at my kids' school for which I'm volunteering, which has been amazing, but it's like not the best in terms of like laying low and not talking and resting and that sort of thing. But
yeah,
I am making a point to just like drink a ton of liquids, make sure I'm going to sleep, taking a NyQuil if I need it.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing as little as I possibly can. Like I'm not piling things onto my plate right now.
That's great.
So for this coming week, my intention is patience with myself, with my family, with my dear, dear dad, who I love so much, who's visiting, and me putting a lot of expectations on myself for having like the house be organized and the house be clean and like... I get kind of high intensity when I'm stressed, and I want to have, and then I lose my patience with others. And so I want to make sure I have patience with those around me and also with myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to have my dad and stepmom visiting. Oh my gosh. I talked to my dad yesterday and he did an imitation of us.
Of us?
Yeah. He was like, I love on the podcast where like, you'll say something, you'll tell Dori, and Dori just goes, and then you'll say something else. And then he was like, and then Dori tells you something, and you go, I love that. Like he was doing a full on.
Oh my God.
I guess he's been listening to the pod.
That's amazing. I'm sorry, really, but that funny. Is amazing.
It was really funny. And I mean, and my stepmom also listens to the podcast, which is so sweet. And I just
that
like
is so sweet.
It's so awesome.
And what?
I know. So that really was cracking me up. It was really making me laugh. He really has our number, as they say.
I mean, look, he begat you. So he obviously gets it on some level.
Yeah. I'm like, half of this is your fault, my old man. You know, you wonder why I'm talking about my anxiety so much.
Oh God.
Genetics. Anyway.
Well, Kate, this has been great. This has been fun.
Let's tell the listeners about our show.
Okay.
Forever 35 is hosted and produced by you and me, Dori Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and it's produced and edited by the one and only Sam Junio. The fantastic Sammy Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is the awesome Acast.
Bye, everyone.